The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Carrie Lawson from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. I hope everyone is doing well today. We're going to start over in the wellness section of Oprah Daily with Why is a good primary care physician so hard to find? From doctor shortages to burnout, the reasons are enough to make you sick. This article is by Rosie Hopegood. A few years ago, San Diego-based emergency physician Andrea Austin, MD, started asking her ER patients a question. Do you have a primary care provider, PCP? And if so, how long does it take you to get an appointment? I'd estimate about half the time patients answer no, and that's why they came to the ER, she says. Of the remaining patients, at least half say it takes 6+ weeks to get an appointment. The stats paint an even starker picture. Nationally, 100 million people do not have access to a PCP. Worryingly, a quarter of those are children. And the bad news? It's only going to get worse. The Association of American Medical Colleges, AAMC, predicts a shortfall of 124,000 doctors by 2034, with a third being PCPs. Why is this MD so essential? Think of your PCP as the quarterback of the team, who's busy making sure that things make sense, says Austin. When somebody has a complicated medical condition, the recommendations from different specialists can counteract each other. You need that primary care physician at the center. Even if you don't have a complex condition, clinical evidence suggests that patients who have a steady PCP relationship live longer and are healthier. Austin adds that prevention really is the best medicine, and points out that PCPs are often able to recognize symptoms of conditions such as hypertension, heart disease, and cancer before they can have devastating consequences. Here's what's going on and how you can land yourself a quarterback for your health care. Where did all the doctors go? There are a number of factors at play here, but the short answer is we don't have enough of them because we're not training as many as we need, says Michael Dill, Director of Workforce Studies at the AAMC. Beyond that, we have a population that's not only aging but also growing, and those two things are driving an increased need for more primary care physicians. As the population ages, so do our doctors. 2 in 5 are going to reach retirement within the next 10 years. The number of students entering med school is also shrinking. Last year, applicants were down 4.7%, per the AAMC. On top of that, we now need more doctors to replace the outgoing ones. It takes 1.5 millennial doctors to replace a retiring physician, explains Helen Faulkner, Regional Vice President of Recruiting at Jackson Physician Search, a doctor recruitment firm. That's due to some positive reasons. We've seen a lot of organizations trying to mitigate burnout by reducing patient contact hours from the traditional 40 hours a week to 32 to 36, allowing extra time for administrative work. With 70% of PCPs suffering from burnout, this is a good thing. One recent study showed that primary care doctors need 26.7 hours to address the amount of work assigned to them on an average day, When you factor in the 3 hours of inbox and documentation tasks, the load is untenable. Another factor that is potentially turning recent grads away from primary care is pay. The average physician leaves training with more than $250,000 in debt, says Faulkner. And primary care is typically less lucrative than specialties because insurance reimbursements skew towards procedures over the intellectual work of primary care, Austin notes. Can I go to urgent care or do a telehealth visit instead? In a pinch, yes, although these options shouldn't replace your quest to find a good PCP. Having a doctor who knows your history and has access to your complete chart and whom you feel comfortable talking to about potential embarrassing maladies should be your end goal here. More on how to achieve this later. Urgent care can fill a gap if you can't get in to see your PCP, but know that you will often see a nurse or a physician's assistant instead of a doctor. The gold standard of medical care is being seen by a physician, says Austin. To that end, anytime things don't seem right, you should be able to say, "I would like you to speak to your supervising physician." Telehealth, meanwhile, can be a great way to see a doctor on short notice. It's a pandemic boom that's here to stay. Last year, virtual care visits accounted for 17% of all physician appointments, compared to 1% in February 2020. If you need a quick prescription or have acute symptoms that don't warrant a trip to the ER, it can be the fastest route to care. What about concierge practices? A traditional PCP can have a roster of 4,000 patients, seeing up to 40 of them a day in 15-minute slots. Concierge practices eliminate that volume and workload. There are now an estimated 1,600 of them across the U.S., catering to approximately 300,000 patients. The model is simple. Patients pay a fee, anywhere from $1,500 to $20,000 a year, to access their doctor, and in return, they get a higher standard of care and attention. Faster access, more FaceTime, easier access to advanced tests, and sometimes even 24/7 return calls. With a concierge practice, doctors can see fewer patients, 6 to 10 a day in 30-minute slots, build closer relationships, and get to know patients' medical histories better. Appointments aren't covered directly by insurance, but can sometimes be claimed back, at least partially. Concierge doctors need all the same qualifications and must be board certified. But Austin recommends checking with the medical board to ensure there isn't a troubling reason someone isn't working in a regular practice. This style of care may be out of many people's budget, although it's worth checking if the provider offers a monthly payment option when it comes to the fee. There are also concierge adjacent services like the Amazon-owned One Medical. You pay $199 a year for access to a local clinic of PCPs and an app with almost instant telehealth appointments. Finding a provider. So, how to find a PCP you like who has appointments this side of Labor Day? Ask your network. Current providers are excellent sources. Does your trusted OBGYN, physical therapist, optometrist, or even dentist know a good doctor? Next, ask everyone you know for names. I personally recommend word-of-mouth referrals, says primary care and internal medicine physician Niso Kai Okekeigbakwi, MD. Positive feedback from trusted family and friends can be a real driving force. You could also try asking local online groups and neighborhood listservs, and that's all in capital letters, listserv. Also consider whether you might benefit from any federal, state, or county programs. For example, If you did military service or are married to a vet, you may be eligible for primary care through Veterans Affairs. Check your insurance carrier directly. Your plan should provide a list of in-network PCPs, says Okeke Igbakwe. But this process will often require a significant amount of research. Filtering is your friend here, as well as looking for in-network local providers who are accepting new patients. You should be able to search by gender, proximity, whether they work weekends and evenings, patient given ratings, languages spoken, accessibility, and hospital affiliations, as well as for specialties like women's health, elder care, or adolescent medicine. Once you have a short list, read their online reviews on sites like healthgrades.com. This should help narrow your picks to two or three candidates. Next, call the office and grill whoever answers. Do they offer telehealth? Is there parking? How long are wait times to see a PCP? How soon can they get you in for an initial appointment? What times do they see patients? Try a listing site. Aggregator sites such as ZocDoc, that's ZocDoc, ZocDoc, and Vosita, that's Vosita, show you available appointments with doctors who accept your insurance. Brainstorm a list of what matters to you most, and then filter accordingly. Hate waiting at the office? ZocDoc lists the percentage of patients who waited less than 30 minutes, in comparison of priority. Go deep reading the reviews. Does it matter to you how long the doctor has been in practice or where they trained? Analyze away. A nice feature of these sites is that they show available appointments and you can book through them. Once you find a match and see a new provider, take note of how you feel afterward. Did they listen patiently and explain things clearly? Was your appointment long enough, or did you feel rushed? In short, did you feel like a whole person, not a number? Everyone deserves to be well cared for and feel respected, says Austin, not least by your very own healthcare quarterback. We're over in Oprah's Insider section. Oprah has gone on vacation, y'all. Here's her 000 message. This article is by Oprah Winfrey, and there's a picture of Oprah in a white V-neck shirt with a white scarf tied around her neck and or her head and sunglasses and pearl earrings, and she's sitting next to Gail, who's in a white visor and sunglasses and a sleeveless top that's white with, it looks like orange or pale orange and lavender palm fronds. She has a watch on, and they're both sitting in a boat, and behind them is a gorgeous lake with, it looks like, some green mountains in the distance. Hi, insiders. Happy Sunday. I've gone fishing. I'm on vacation with Gail this week, and I wish you rest. We all need time to relax and recharge, and that's certainly what I'll be focusing on this week. What do you do to unwind? Let me know, and I'll see you next Sunday. We're over in the books section. Are you giving too much of yourself to your friends? In his new book, You Don't Have to Do It Alone, Mark Nepo offers wisdom on people-pleasing, toxic friendships, and coming into your own power. And this article is by Mark Nepo. In Marge Piercy's poem, The Friend, the sure one says, "Cut off your hands. They are always poking at things." The needy one replies, "Yes, I love you." And the sure one replies, "That's very nice. I like to be loved. Have you cut off your hands yet?" This short exchange warns against the complete misuse of friendship, which is asking for what should never be asked and giving what should never be given. Since Piercy casts the Sure One's request as so extreme, it's easy to see how cruel and misguided this relationship has become. But we often experience this misuse of friendship in more subtle ways, as requests to give up parts of who we are for the sake of the relationship. Often one of us will say, "I don't want you to travel without me," or, "If you love me, you'll stop seeing that friend of yours who's mean to me," or, "You know, I can't stand it when you laugh too loud." The covenant of true friendship is knit from the love that prevents us from asking someone to cut off part of who they are, and in our own self-respect to say no to such requests. Yet it's often hard to discern when we are healthfully giving to another and when we're cutting off our hands. A crab, a frog, a shrimp, and a minnow were friends. All four worked together in the fields. But since the crab was a good cook, she was given the job of preparing dinner every day. When there was a shortage of meat, the crab put one of her legs in to sweeten the vegetables. Knowing that she'd sacrificed one of her legs, the others praised the crab for how delicious dinner was that day. And so the crab kept putting a leg in each day, and the others praised her, never having had such tasty meals. Finally, the frog, the shrimp, and the minnow came home, and the crab was nowhere to be found, though dinner was waiting on the stove. They waited, but ate without the crab, only to find that the stump of her body was in the stew. Seeing the sacrifice the crab had made of herself, the other three animals started to laugh. They laughed and laughed until they rolled around on the floor. They laughed until evening, when they finally stopped from sheer exhaustion. They had laughed so hard that the frog's spine was bent, the minnow's neck was swollen, and the shrimp could only walk backward. They could no longer work the fields or live on land. They were forced to live in the water, where we find them today. This is another tale about the misuse of friendship and the disregard of one's self. What makes the crab decide to put a piece of herself into the stew? No one asks this of her. She willingly gives too much of herself to please the others. When she is praised for how good the meal tastes, she willingly decides to give even more of herself. Laura Writing defines praise as the confidence in yourself that you get from people whom you have succeeded in pleasing when you haven't any confidence in yourself. Without any confidence or self-worth, without befriending ourselves, we are dangerously susceptible to sweetening the stew we prepare for others by tossing in a part of ourselves. But what of the others in this tale? Once they are aware that the crab has put in one of her legs, they are not good friends. They don't say, "Stop! You mustn't harm yourself this way." They praise her and encourage her to give even more of herself to feed them. Worse, when they find she has sacrificed her life to feed them, they laugh until they distort their own being, and so they lose their ability to live on land. Their cruel response warns us that when we distance ourselves from the plight of others, we become crippled by our isolation. The lessons here are twofold. In true friendship, you don't have to please anyone. You just need to be completely who you are. And true friends won't ask you to cut off your hands or to give up parts of yourself to feed them. That these lessons are carried in such an ancient tale tells us that humans have always struggled with what is proper to give and what is proper to receive between friends. This story offers another extreme example of giving ourselves away, forcing us to ask, in what unhealthy ways do we throw part of who we are into the stew? And how do we give ourselves away when no one asks us to? How often do we agree to things we don't believe in just to belong? How often do we go along with indifference or cruelty, afraid we'll be rejected? The deeper question is, what kind of friendship is it if we can't show up exactly as we are? And why would we want to preserve our membership in a group that is inconsiderate and mean-spirited? I have been the willing crab more than once. it's important to own this. Because without sustaining the weight of our failings within our own personality, we have no chance of befriending our life. And without befriending our humanity, there's no chance of knowing self-worth. There's a book that accompanies this article, You Don't Have to Do It Alone by Mark Nepo. It's $20 at Amazon and $19 at bookshop.org. We have a new word of the week, shadow work. You can let your past haunt you, or you can bring it out into the light. This article is by Cassie Hurwitz. Shadow work. If you believe your anxiety and or depression is linked to buried trauma, painful or shameful memories, unresolved feelings, it may be time to page Dr. Jung. Carl Jung, the founder of analytical psychology, first introduced the shadow to reference the hidden or repressed aspects of the self, says Danielle Massey, a licensed psychotherapist who specializes in shadow work. In practice, it involves getting in touch with one's hidden self and surfacing it in order to heal. The idea, says Massey, is to ease patients into a state where unconscious memories can easily be retrieved by the mind. But it's not like the sunken place from Get Out. You can get there through practices like journaling, affirmations, and meditation, or by following the step-by-step process outlined in Massey's book, Shadow Work. Another popular guide is The Shadow Work Journal by Kyla Shaheen. If you're worried about the traumas that might resurface, you may prefer to work with a knowledgeable therapist. Here's a how-to guide to finding one. So as the article before ended on a place to go to find a therapist, we're going to jump to that article in Wellness, The Ultimate Guide on How to Find a Therapist. Finding a therapist can be daunting, but no more. This article is by Marielle Marlies. Self-care for many often means elaborate skincare routines, double-tapping Instagram reels that explain childhood trauma, or purchasing the latest self-help book. While these practices can be beneficial, the question remains, how are you really doing? One of the best ways to tend to your emotional well-being is by speaking to a therapist. But according to Mental Health America, 54% of adults with mental illness did not receive treatment last year. Just like physical health, the sooner you come in, the better, says Lindsay Fleming, a licensed therapist in Chicago who treats children, teens, and young adults. If you have a broken foot and you keep walking on it, the pain and injury is going to get worse. Why suffer more if you know there is help out there? If you're therapy curious, but the idea of finding someone to talk to feels overwhelming or like just one more thing on your to-do list, read on for our guide to making the process as straightforward as possible. How to find a therapist. Number one, check your insurance. While it may not be fun, it's important to know what your insurance will and won't cover. The first step is to begin scouting therapists that accept your insurance and identify if you prefer a particular gender, specifications, or credentials, explains Erin Muller, a licensed clinical social worker and CEO of Modify Wellness, a nonprofit that provides mental health resources to individuals and corporations. It's also worth noting that therapists may offer a sliding scale, which is treatment priced based on a person's income. This exists to help make therapy more attainable to those with hardship, explains Muller. You could also try reaching out to your human resources department for referral to an employee assistant program. Many times they offer 6 to 12 free sessions. Also, there are organizations that offer free services like Silence the Shame, Black Men Heal, Boris L. Foundation, and Mueller's organization, modify wellness. Number two, identify any immediate needs. Therapists may specialize in a particular need, like trauma or grief. So ask yourself, what are you looking to gain from therapy? If you want to work on your relationship with your partner, it may be best to look into someone who specializes in couples counseling, says Mueller. If you want a deeper understanding of your emotions, then you may need to look for a psychodynamic therapist. Number three, seek out recommendations. Consider asking your family members and friends for recommendations. From my experience, personally and professionally, word of mouth is the best way to find a therapist, says Fleming. But bear in mind that a therapist who works well with your friend might not always be the best fit for you. Oftentimes, it comes down to the particular chemistry of a patient-therapist relationship. A tip to approach the conversation? Let your friends and family briefly know that you're struggling and taking steps to feel and do better in life, explains Brad Brenner, PhD, a licensed psychologist and co-founder of the Therapy Group of DC. Let them know that telling them made you nervous and thank them for giving you time to speak to them. Number four, use online resources to find a therapist. There are plenty of websites that list therapists. PsychologyToday.com, InclusiveTherapists.com, WithTherapy.com, CliniciansOfColor.org, TherapyForBlackGirls.com, BlackTherapistRock.com, MentalHealthMatch.com, OpenPathCollective.org. Online research is helpful for someone who is therapy curious. On therapists' websites, you'll see photos of them and what their offices look like, explains Brenner. This may sound overly simplistic, but in my experience, it helps folks to figure out some crucial questions like, could I see myself talking about my struggles to one of these people? Could I see myself in their office or talking to them online? However, Brenner also warns that websites like PsychologyToday.com can generate hundreds of results and be overwhelming. To combat this, he recommends contacting multiple therapists at once to quickly narrow your search. Virtual therapy. Teletherapy is a great option to provide you with mental health support without leaving home, particularly if you're short on time, live in an area where in-person options are limited, or have physical disabilities that make traveling hard. According to a recent study, virtual therapy is as effective as face-to-face, with no significant differences in the reduction of depressive symptoms and significant increases in self-reported quality of life. Below are a few online therapy platforms to consider. Headway. Headway allows you to search in-network providers who specialize in whatever issue you're hoping to address. Everything from anger management to anxiety, eating disorders to maternal mental health. Once you find a provider, you can schedule an appointment or a discovery call via the platform itself. By finding an in-network therapist, you can expect to pay up to 75% less than when paying out of pocket, and any copays are billed through the platform itself. Two Chairs. This mental health provider offers a bespoke matching service, offering both virtual and in-person therapy. Two Chairs team is composed of 500-plus therapists. What does starting look like? A licensed therapist trained in matching potential clients with the right therapist will spend 45 minutes learning about your needs, goals, and preferences. We combine this therapist's clinical assessment with our technology, analyzing over 300 factors to pair each client with a therapist who can best help them, says Colleen Marshall, Vice President of Clinical Care at Two Chairs. Getting this right is crucial because research shows that the client-therapist relationship is the key to great therapy and better outcomes. Therapy is a relationship-based intervention, so the relationship has to be right for therapy to be effective. The platform is currently an in-network provider with Aetna, Kaiser Northern California, and Kaiser Washington. We also see out-of-network clients and have an entire team dedicated to helping people navigate the complicated world of insurance, billing, and reimbursements, explains Marshall. BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers quick access to therapists, usually within a few days. Therapists at BetterHelp are equipped to treat every issue except crisis. It's worth noting that clients pay up front for 4 sessions of therapy. BetterHelp is considered a sales platform and is not a provider, so keep in mind you'll have to pay out of pocket. Talkspace. Talkspace is a digital platform offering individual and couples therapy, as well as psychiatric treatment. It's an affordable option, typically costing 80% less than face-to-face therapy. Talkspace therapists are licensed and experienced in treating a wide range of issues and over 120 mental health conditions. Check to see if you're covered through your insurance. The Big Silence Foundation. Founder Karina Dawn grew up with a mother with schizophrenia. She went on to overcome a dark period of depression, anxiety, and substance abuse to found this charitable foundation to help erase the stigma surrounding mental health. Therapy turned her life around. After you leave the session, it's like a weight is lifted off your shoulders, she says. The Big Silence Foundation offers a mental health helpline to anyone who is directly or indirectly impacted by mental health issues. If you're in need of help, text HERO, all in capital letters, H-E-R-O, at 741741 to receive free and confidential support from a counselor. You can also apply for a grant to cover the cost of one-to-one therapy. How long should you stay in therapy? There are cases where therapy is brief, focused, and short-term, and only requires a few sessions, says Brenner. Others may require a few months or even years. Whichever situation you find yourself in, try 3 to 6 sessions to see if your therapist is a good fit for you. This is important because the first few sessions will be solely focused on telling your story and what's bringing you to therapy. Should you decide to continue your therapy journey, review your treatment goals with your therapist periodically. Therapy is not like school, where you're learning lessons and are given homework you will be graded on, explains Fleming. It's more about creating a space and guiding you to help you find yourself and improve your mental health. So we're staying in wellness on 25 self-care tips to boost your mental health. Because just this once, everyone else can wait. This article is by Bridget Early and Marielle Marlies. Between the pandemic, navigating makeshift work-from-home spaces, and dealing with staggeringly high levels of unemployment, the past few years have given us plenty of reasons to feel anxious, stressed, and depressed, which is exactly why self-care has never been more important for women, men, kids, teens, parents, teachers, students, and, well, just about everyone. The benefits of focusing on yourself, of tuning into your body and taking the time to nourish it properly, are profound. Research suggests that the more we practice self-care, the more confident, creative, and productive we are. Not to mention that we also experience more joy, make better decisions, build stronger relationships, and communicate more effectively. Taking care of your mental health is about whatever you need to feel happier or more relaxed. For some people, that means watching a rom-com while taking a bubble bath and sipping a glass of Cabernet Sauvignon. For others, it may be whipping up an indulgent dessert, firing up a yoga app, checking in with an online therapist, going for a solo walk around the neighborhood with a favorite podcast, or buying a self-care subscription box. Here, experts share their best self-care tips, ideas, and activities so you can start making you a priority. For a quick self-care fix, rake out the essential oils. Scientists have found that smell is the only sense with a direct link to the limbic system, the area of the brain that plays a major role in emotional regulation, memory, and behavior, says Abhi Hendra, a counselor and therapist based in the United Kingdom. Use traditional calming smells, such as lavender and frankincense, which research suggests lowers anxiety and depression, she suggests. Also try smells that have associations with happy recollections. This could be anything from a type of candy you love as a kid to your grandma's perfume. You could also try these in candle form. Put on a face mask. A face mask is just as beneficial for your well-being as it is for your skin, because it serves as a time to take a break and treat yourself, says Jacqueline Schaefer. Make it a habit to do a weekly mask, she suggests. You can even try making one yourself using items you likely have in your pantry. Trade your coffee for a soothing cup of tea. Not only does herbal tea help you stay hydrated, but the process of making and drinking a cup of tea creates a mini respite, says Carla Marie Manley, a clinical psychologist in Santa Rosa, California. Plus, whether you're trying Oprah's favorite chai or enjoying a chamomile, the simple act of tasting a soothing beverage can make the mind feel calmer and clearer, says Manley. Write in a gratitude journal. Studies have indicated that practicing gratitude has numerous benefits, including optimizing our cardiac health, reducing anxiety and depression, and sharpening our brain function and giving us peace of mind, says Jeff Nolan, a clinical psychologist in Malibu, California. Jot down a few things you're grateful for in a journal or on little slips of paper, then put them in a jar and set aside time to revisit them each month. If that sounds daunting, simply begin your day by thinking about someone or something you truly appreciate. Take a moment of mindfulness. Research shows that regular meditation can potentially undo the damaging effects of stress and calms the part of the brain responsible for the fight or flight response, says Ida Bikless, PhD, life coach, and co-founder of Health Yoga Life in Boston. Follow this self-care tip. Set your phone timer for 5 minutes. Close your eyes, take a few deep breaths, and release any tension that your body is holding on to. If you begin to wander off into other thoughts, don't judge yourself. Simply bring yourself back to the awareness of your breath, she advises. If you need more guidance, try one of these meditation apps. Play with your pet. There's a reason there was such a pet adoption boom during the pandemic. Our pets make us happier people. Self-care comes from finding ways to release serotonin and oxytocin, like the joy from playing with or petting your pup, says Musselman. Research backs up this notion and even suggests that our pets can also make us healthier mentally and physically. But if you don't have a furry companion, some mindless Instagram scrolling might actually help. Studies show that looking at photos or videos of cute animals can increase mood and decrease stress, says Kellefern Pomeranz, a clinical psychologist in Menlo Park, California. Have a good cry. Might seem counterintuitive to think that crying could make you happier, but it can be one of the best ways to improve anxiety levels and lift your mood, says Musselman. If the tears aren't coming naturally, try watching a romance movie, reading a love story, or listening to some sad songs. Write positive affirmations. It may be perceived as cheesy, but it's powerful. Writing affirmations that deeply resonate with your beliefs has the power to shift your mindset. It allows you to reframe the way in which you speak to yourself, and by consequence, others too. Try to wake up and speak your truth aloud, Over time, you may be surprised at how much it has impacted the way you see yourself. For a longer treat yourself day, get a massage. There are many studies that show a massage doesn't just feel good in the moment, says Vu. Whether it's from your partner, a high-tech tool, or professional massages have been shown to relieve pain and stiffness, boost immunity, reduce anxiety and depression, lower stress and blood pressure, and increase circulation, he says. Dance with abandon. Cutting loose has very real psychological benefits, says Jennifer Musselman, executive coach and therapist. Simply turn up your favorite tunes. Try these feel-good songs or take an online dance class to get the full benefit. Do some decluttering. Research shows that clutter increases our cortisol levels, the stress hormone that is a risk factor for many illnesses, reduces creativity and focus, and can even make us more sensitive to pain, says Baggett. It's not your imagination that you are more relaxed in a clutter-free environment. Set a timer for whatever feels manageable and get busy. Do a financial audit. Even though it may not sound appealing, spending a few hours to honestly evaluate your spending habits can be a liberating experience. It can be difficult to confront aspects of life that have an intense charge, but awareness is the first step to action. A financial audit can allow you to see where you're spending money and hopefully ease any related financial anxieties. Get a facial. Book the facial. You deserve it. Or stick with a do-it-yourself treatment like Gua Sha. That's G-U-A, then a separate word, S-H-A. Seriously, your skin should be healthy and glowing, and you may even feel more confident in social settings afterward. Taking the time to care for arguably the most important part of your body, that beautiful face of yours, is a practice of self-love and care that should be revered consistently. Book medical appointments. We know calling your doctor is far less glamorous than getting a facial, but the fact of the matter is that without your health, you have nothing. So make sure all is good by scheduling those pesky appointments you have been putting off for just a little too long. Could be life-changing. Take a bath. Ah, there's nothing like a bath after a long day. But why wait for the long day to treat yourself? If baths are your thing, make taking one a consistent practice, like Oprah does. It's a quick and simple way to kick your feet up, unwind, and relax. Be sure to use a luxurious towel and scented bubbles or aromas for the maximum experience. Self-care you should do on the regular. Go outside. No matter how busy you are, experts say one of the best things you can do for yourself is to make it a habit to lace up your walking shoes and step outside for a breath of fresh air each day. Doing this, even for short increments at a time, provides you with many health benefits, both physical and mental, says Emily Cosgrove, a licensed therapist and life coach in Ontario. Research suggests spending time outside helps you sleep better at night, reduces stress levels, boosts mental health, and stimulates the immune system. Banish your phone from the bedroom. Ideally, your bedroom is a sanctuary for sleep, relaxation, and intimacy. Phones, TVs, and laptops disrupt all of those things, says life coach Francesca Hoagie. Take care of your physical and mental health by giving your brain a break and encouraging better sleep in your screen-free area. Of course, if that's not exactly practical for you, consider giving yourself a cutoff, at which point you can set your phone on night mode. Don't worry, you can program certain numbers to still ring in case of emergency, and feel free to pick up a book instead. Start therapy. Mental health treatment should be of the utmost priority. Starting therapy can feel like a really scary commitment, but the skills and insight you can gain from therapy has the potential to alter the way you view and cope with life on a daily basis. Stop hitting the snooze button. Many people actually build time for snoozing into their morning routine, believing it's a gentler way to wake up, but this actually causes sleep to be more disrupted, leaving the person feeling more sleepy, says Cindy T. Graham, a licensed psychologist. Instead, sleep experts recommend being honest with yourself and setting the alarm for the time you actually get up, she says. Your body will then learn to prepare for waking at that time, and you will feel less tired over the course of the day. Parts of this article were edited due to time. Over in culture and news, Celine Dion delivers a triumphant performance underneath the Eiffel Tower for the 2024 Olympics. The entire city of Paris and the rest of the world cheered on the superstar for her grand return to the stage. This article is by Bianca Betancourt. Celine Dion reminded the world she is a one-of-one talent tonight in Paris. To close the 2024 opening ceremony for the Olympic Games in Paris, France, the global superstar, returned to the stage for the first time since revealing she has been struggling with stiff person syndrome, a neurological condition that derailed her lucrative Las Vegas residency and the singer's ability to tour. Since sharing the news with the world, it's been unclear whether or not Dion would ever be able to perform again. But tonight, the superstar prevailed. Dressed in an elegant beaded fringe gown courtesy of Dior and accompanied by a piano player below the Eiffel Tower, Dion performed a stunning rendition of Edith Piaf's La Hymne à l'Amour, visibly emotional during what will very likely go down in history as one of her most memorable performances ever. Dion held back tears while singing, visibly recognizing the magnitude of the moment and being able to sing once again for the world. Ahead of her performance tonight, Dion was seen interacting with throngs of fans on the streets of Paris. She shared a few photos from her return to the City of Light on Instagram, writing alongside the post, "I'm so happy to be here with you this week. I'd like to also extend a warm thank you to the local gendarmes for keeping us safe. Celine XX." And there's a picture of Celine dressed, it looks like a black fur coat, and taking a selfie with someone with a crowd of people all around her. One woman behind her is holding up one of her CDs. Still in culture and news, Lady Gaga brings a major dose of glamour to the Paris Olympics opening ceremony. The superstar performed a rendition of Mon Truc en Plume to kick off the 2024 Games. This article is by Bianca Betancourt. Few knew how to start a party like Lady Gaga. The superstar was the first performer to take the stage along the Seine River for the 2024 Paris Olympics opening ceremony. Gaga brought a healthy dose of glamour to the ceremony, performing a rendition of the French song Mon Truc en Plume while supporting a Dior haute couture ensemble consisting of an elegant black leotard, matching evening gloves, classic black-heeled pumps, and even a crystal-embellished microphone for one of her first televised performances of 2024. Her glam was Parisian-approved, too, with the singer opting for a classic red lip and her platinum blonde hair pulled back in a chic chignon. Throughout the performance, Gaga's dancers circled the star as she sang, incorporating pale pink pom-poms and larger-than-life feathers into the choreography. Lady Gaga's appearance at the 2024 Paris opening ceremony appears to be a launching pad for what's sure to be a busy press season for the singer. She's set to return to the silver screen alongside Joaquin Phoenix, the sequel to 2019's Joker, Todd Phillips' Joker, Folie à Deux, this November, and she's also been teasing her long-awaited seventh studio album to her local Little Monsters as well. The singer recently told Empire that her fans should expect the unexpected when it comes to her portrayal of Harley Quinn in the upcoming sequel. "People know me by my stage name, Lady Gaga, right? That's me as that performer, but this is not what this movie is. I'm playing a character, so I worked a lot on the way that I sang to come from Lee and to not come from me as a performer, she told the outlet. It's unlikely anything I've ever done before. Again, in culture and news, Jennifer Lopez was the magnificent main character at her Bridgerton-themed ball. Forget the diamond of the season. J-Lo presided as the queen. This article is by Chelsea Sanchez. In the Bridgerton universe, there is the diamond of the season, and then there is the queen who chooses the diamond of the season. Make no mistake, Jennifer Lopez falls firmly into the latter category. This past weekend, the Can't Get Enough singer brought Bridgerton to life in the Hamptons, where she hosted a spectacular ball for her 55th birthday. The party included various elements typically associated with social events in the early 1800s, from a horse-drawn carriage to a live orchestra. Of course, there was also all the glamorous Regency-era clothing. In a video posted on Instagram, Lopez showed off the two looks she wore for the night. She looked positively regal in her first outfit, which involved a magnificent light blue ball gown with a bodice piece featuring off-the-shoulder cuffs and gilded diamond-shaped embroidery draped over a voluminous skirt stitched with larger-than-life gold floral details. Given the magnitude of the outfit, Lopez let the dress do most of the talking and kept her accessories to a minimum. She opted for sheer white opera gloves, stud earrings, and a simple pendant necklace. In her hair, she wore a gold laurel headpiece. And there's a photograph of her in the dress, and she's seated on a gold chair that looks like it came out of the Regency era with it. It almost looks like a crown on the top. And her hair is all done on the top of her head, and she has very high gold high heels on with the outfit. And then there's another picture of her in the same dress standing in front of a white carriage with red seat upholstery. And another picture of her outside with a long table and chairs with flowers, and behind her there's a chandelier, even though it's outside, hanging behind her. And then there are several more pictures of her inside on the floor with a trellis lattice behind her, and then the back of her dress that you can see crisscrossed and laced up as she's heading out where other people are dressed up, one woman with a large white wig. Later in the night, the multi-hyphenate changed into something a little more fluid that allowed her to move more easily through the dance floor and mingle with guests. This second dress, also featuring an off-the-shoulder neckline, was a gauzy moss-green piece with a sequined floral bust. Lopez later acknowledged all the birthday love she's been receiving from fans in a sweet note posted on Instagram. I've been seeing all of your birthday wishes, beautiful videos, and posts all last night and this morning from all over the world, she wrote. I have laughed, smiled, shed some tears, and when I saw the billboard in Times Square, I was completely overwhelmed. I really do have the best, most amazing fans in the world. I could never express how moved I am and how incredibly blessed I feel to have all of you be a part of my life. Thank you so very much. And there's a picture of her in some mint-colored satin pajamas. And there's a sign that says Happy Birthday in balloons above her. And it looks like a beautiful tiered cake with roses on it. Another article in Culture and News, Prince Harry says his fight against UK tabloids is central to rift with royal family. This article is by Chelsea Sanchez. Prince Harry says his legal crusade against the British tabloids is a central piece of the growing rift between him and other members of the royal family. For the first time since a judge ruled in his favor against the Mirror Group newspapers for phone hacking, Harry spoke about the case and why it is part of a deepening divide between him and other royals for ITV's new documentary Tabloids on Trial. The judge's ruling last December found the publisher guilty of widespread and habitual phone hacking, a landmark decision that Harry called a monumental victory. To go in there and come out and have the judge rule in our favor was obviously huge, he said. But for him to go as far as he did with regard to this wasn't just the individual people. This went right up to the top. This was lawyers. This was high executives. And to be able to achieve that in a trial, that's a monumental victory. Despite the triumph, Harry's various legal battles against the British press have soured his relationship with his family. That's certainly a central piece to it, he said. But you know, that's a hard question to answer because anything I say about my family results in a torrent of abuse from the press. He added, I've made it very clear that this is something that needs to be done. It would be nice if we, you know, did it as a family. I believe that, again, from a service standpoint and when you are in a public role, that these are the things that we should be doing for the greater good. But, you know, I'm doing this for my reasons. When asked how he feels about his family not taking up the banner against the press's intrusions into their personal lives in the same way he has, Harry said, I think everything that's played out has shown people what the truth of the matter is. For me, the mission continues. But it has. It has, yes. It's caused, yeah, as you say, part of a rift. However, he says his grandmother, Queen Elizabeth, would be supportive of his fight, he shared. We had many conversations before she passed. This is very much something she supported. She knew how much this meant to me. She's up there going, see this through to the end without question. When he asked whether he was bringing attention towards himself by bringing up these lawsuits, he said, I don't think there's anybody else in the world that is better suited and placed to be able to see this through than myself. It's still dangerous. And all it takes is one lone actor, one person who reads the stuff to act on what they have read, and whether it's a knife or acid, whatever it is. And there are things that are a genuine concern for me. It's one of the reasons why I won't bring my wife back to this country. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Carrie Lawson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.